This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and if it's Friday, then we have a week in review. And boy, do we have a week to review, including something that hasn't even happened yet, the anticipated announcement next hour of how the city of Boston will handle the future of suspended police commissioner Dennis White after an investigation into past allegations of domestic violence. Mass anxiety over mask anxiety continues now that President Biden says indoor mask usage can be a thing of the past if you're vaxxed.
Well, today is a great day for America. In our long battle with coronavirus. Just a few hours ago, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the CDC announced that they are no longer recommending that fully vaccinated people need wear masks.
Which has us asking, wait, is this pandemic over for us here in the Commonwealth?
This isn't just us kind of coming down toward, you know, where we were, say, in the fall. This is us looking better in terms of death than we've ever looked during the whole pandemic.
Dr. Shira Durone of Tufts Medical Center there speaking to WBUR. Meanwhile, pitched political battles between Democrats and Republicans and between Republicans and Republicans hit home, including for Governor Baker.
I've been a Republican since I was 20 years old. And I continue to believe in what I consider to be sort of the core values of the party.
So let's talk about all of it, beginning with a preview of the news yet to come from Acting Mayor Kim Janey and what it might mean for Boston's police reform agenda. Join our Week in Review conversation, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us for their analysis this week, Marie St. Fleur. She's a former Massachusetts state representative and now a principal at St. Fleur Communications and the CEO of a cannabis company. And Joe Battenfeld, Boston Herald political columnist. Marie, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, Tiziana.
Joe, great. Thanks, Marie. Joe, great to have you too.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay, so we're starting with policing. We don't know what Acting Mayor Janey's going to say yet, but we know it's going to matter, and we know it figures into the ongoing conversation we've had here on Radio Boston about police reform. Marie, we know you served on the task force for the city. Joe, you've watched this closely. So we're going to bring in WBUR's Allie Jarmanning to give us a bit of context, and then we'll talk about what to expect. Allie has been following the story. Welcome, Allie.
Hey, Tiziana.
Okay, so Allie, tell us how long did Dennis White actually serve as police commissioner before he was put on leave?
So officially, not quite 3 days. Back in February, he was announced by Mayor Marty Walsh as the new police commissioner on Thursday, sworn in on Monday, and put on leave on Wednesday. And Walsh, you'll remember, was at that point already on his way out as President Biden's pick for labor secretary. He announced there would be an outside investigation into Dennis White. And since then, we've been waiting for that investigation to wrap up and for a decision from the new mayor, Kim Janey.
So Marty Walsh goes to Washington. Kim Janey steps in as acting mayor. What happened with the investigation during that transition and between then and today?
Yeah, so it continued, and the city got a copy of the final report late last month, and Janey was briefed on it the first week in May. And since then, we've just been waiting for Janey to announce what's going to happen and release the report, and that's expected to happen within the next hour.
Yeah, to be clear, we spoke with her on air here on Monday, May 3rd. The report had gone into the city over that weekend. She had not yet been briefed yet. I think that was like 2 weeks ago. So there's been a lag here. This happens against the backdrop of a mayoral race where her handling of police reform is becoming an issue, and an issue that's a bit of a target for her opponents towards her. Are people around the city viewing this decision as a leadership test for Acting Mayor Janey?
So there's a ton of attention on this decision, and it's not an easy one for her. On one side, you have some policing groups, clergy, former police commissioner William Gross, who say White should be reinstated, that this is an unfair attack on him over old accusations. And you have lots of people, including those who work with domestic violence survivors, who say someone with this kind of record cannot lead a police department that victims are supposed to call for help. So really, no matter what decisions she makes, she's going to get blowback.
Now, there's been some unconfirmed reporting just in the last hour or so of what she's about to say. We don't have that confirmed, so we're not addressing that. But what is the range of possible outcomes here, Allie?
Yeah, so White could get his job back and lead the Boston Police Department again, or Janey could decline to reinstate White, which creates its own complications because as acting mayor, she can't make permanent appointments according to the city charter. So she'd have to have an interim commissioner in the role at least until November when voters choose who will be the next mayor, and that person will get to decide who the police commissioner will be.
Okay, Allie, thanks for setting that up. I know you're going to continue to follow it, and our listeners, you should stay tuned to All Things Considered this afternoon for the follow-up after Acting Mayor Janey's announcement. Allie, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, so listeners, do you see what's happening in Boston as important to policing in your own community, or do you feel separated from this? If it's important in your community, how and why? What do you think the statute of limitations on someone's past history is or should be? And are there lines in the sand for law enforcement, types of accusations, past history, that are disqualifying that might not be in other areas? Join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So Marie, you know, we don't know what the investigation will find. We don't know yet what she's going to decide to do about it, but we do know this is really important. And you've been on the police reform, task force. What messages do you need to hear from the acting mayor today, regardless of the outcome?
So regardless of the outcome, I have to say that as having participated in the task force, I got to have a close-up interactions with Superintendent White. I've appreciated the way he came to the table and worked with all of us for months to make certain that we put forth recommendations for police reform that would lead this city of Boston into more a fair and just police department and their interactions with the city. He was open to reform. There was nothing that was an issue that was off limits to him. He was willing to listen. It's my understanding he took it back to his people at the Boston Police Department and brought their views into the chamber. The issue of domestic violence came up, and it's reflected in the recommendations that we made. And so one of the things that I'd love the acting mayor to do is to really honor the service, you know, that this superintendent, no matter what decision that she's made, that she's honored the service that he has provided to the city of Boston for well over 30 years. The reality is he has actually served in some of the toughest areas in the city. And it's my understanding, because he used to be in my old district, served with distinction, that he has had accusations that were leveled against him. But again, there were never any charges. And these were accusations that were public record for many years as he made his way up the chain of command in the city of Boston. So whatever she does, I hope that that is honored. It was disappointing for me the way things turned out in February.
And I should be clear for our listeners that he did also serve on the task force. So, Joe, there's the policy of this, and then, as Allie reminded us, there's the politics of this. How tricky is this for Acting Mayor Kim Janey, who's also Boston mayoral candidate Kim Janey?
Well, let me put it this way. Anytime you have to call a press conference at 4 o'clock on a Friday, it's not good. You're not going to be delivering good news. It's something that you want to get over with in hopes that it disappears in a few days. But this issue is not going to disappear. This, in fact, as you mentioned, this is her most important decision since she's been acting mayor. A lot of people are looking at her. The cops are looking at her, especially because Dennis White has a lot of support in the police department. And so the police are going to be looking at her. Domestic violence advocates are going to be looking at her to decide what she wants to do. And it's a tough position that she's in, that Walsh really put her in. Let's not forget, too, that Mayor Walsh is the one who put her in this position by nominating, by appointing White within hours, really. It was a really quick decision that he made without much vetting, apparently. So it's kind of, she was kind of stuck with this decision, and it's a tough one.
So, Marie, to what extent is this actually not a story about the politics of today or what acting Mayor Kim Janey does today, but of administrative leadership in the Walsh administration and the handoff from former Boston Police Department Commissioner William Gross to Dennis White?
So, I mean, I think even the former mayor would admit that this was badly handled. I think he probably admitted that on his way out, in terms of the process, the transparency of the process. So I think that, and the fact that it was a permanent versus rather than an interim. So I think that that could be admitted, that there's a challenge there. But in my mind, so I go back, I think this is a leadership decision for the acting mayor, because this will give us an indication of how she makes tough decisions, right? This is a very difficult decision, as Joe has pointed out. But the reality is, we're also a community of people, I know I am, that understands that, you know, we're about redemption, we're about rehabilitation. I mean, and that people are going to make mistakes, and that at what point do people then have a chance to move forward from those mistakes? I mean, and who gets to get to move forward? Because I think if we pull up the records of many, we'd find that they were that they were probably more challenging situations than Dennis White presents. And so I think there's a lot of issues that is wrapped up in this. It's really about, again, the issue of redemption. It's about leadership. And it's also about who gets a chance for a second chance.
So you're talking about an equity issue here too, Marie.
Exactly. It's absolutely an equity issue. It's absolutely an equity issue.
Before we go to the break, Joe, I want to come to you, ask you one other question on this. Yesterday, Boston City Councilor Anissa Asaibi-George, who's the only major mayoral candidate not to support a defund the police agenda, was endorsed by William Gross, the former commissioner and the one who recommended Dennis White as his successor. She, I believe, and announced that as a powerful endorsement for her. Depending on what happens this afternoon, could that endorsement be weakened?
Well, it could be because Ross, as you mentioned before, has really stood for Dennis White and has backed him strongly and has hinted that he has criticism for Mayor Janey. So this could set up a situation where you have Ross on one side with Asaibi-George and Janey on the other side, depending on how she handles the White situation. Because she basically supports some aspects of the defund the police movement. So I think it is an important crossroads.
So listen, you had a lot to say when the outdoor masks came off. So now indoor masks are coming off. Is this the right time to do this? Is it too soon? You going to follow the science, or is your risk tolerance in a different place? You're going to keep that mask on for a while longer. And what do you see as the complicating factors here around policy, compliance, guidance? Let's talk about it. All right. So we know that the mask order came down yesterday, Joe Battenfeld. Joe Biden is celebrating it as a great step forward. What's your reaction?
Well, the problem is there's a mixed message, because in Massachusetts, we still have the mask mandate, if I'm understanding it correct, that they're basically
that
still saying that the city is still, the city of Boston still has the mask mandate, and when you go indoors someplace, you still have to wear a mask. And I was out this morning taking a walk, and many people were still wearing their masks outdoors. So it appears that a lot of people are still hesitant to get rid of their masks, which I find surprising, because I'm ready to shed my mask, you know, easily. I'm happy to do it. And, you know, I'm walking around outside without a mask, because that's what the CDC says you could do. So it's a little confusing for people right now, I think.
So a couple of pieces of data there. First, the governor said today that he was pleased about the new guidance and would update his guidance next week. But Joe, you're right. In the meantime, the indoor mask mandate stands as is here in the Commonwealth. Today, according to the Globe, Rhode Islanders who have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19 will no longer have to wear masks or social distance from others indoors or outdoors effective next Tuesday, May 18th. So a change coming there. On the flip side, this timing thing, Joe, that you just brought up, is an issue. After the announcement from the CDC on indoor masking by those who are fully vaccinated, WBUR spoke with Dr. Ashish Jha. He's the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. He's been on with us a number of times. And here's what he said he thought Massachusetts ought to do.
I would hold on indoor mask mandates for a few more weeks. Why? Because there's still a lot of unvaccinated people who are still in the process of getting vaccinated. Vaccines became widely available on April 19th. And it takes about 6 weeks or so from that time period for people to get fully vaccinated. So I would not lift indoor mask mandates until probably June 1st or sometime around then.
Now, Marie St. Fleur, we have you back, yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're back.
So do you agree with that? Do you think the governor should be slow in the uptake on this or follow suit with Rhode Island and put something new in place next week?
I think if he should listen to the public health experts. We are, according to some reports, one of the third safest states in the union at the moment. I think Hawaii being the top one from some of the language, what I've read. We had a rocky start, but then once we got going, we've been able to bring the numbers down, whether it is, you know, incidents of death, whether it is hospitalizations. Our vaccine numbers are up. We're about 3 million people who have been vaccinated. So we've got we're halfway there. We've got a little bit more to go. So I think that if we're patient, then we won't have to do what New York did, then have to do an about face and shut everything down again. So I think we've come this far together. And I actually thank the Massachusetts residents for actually really being vigilant about this pandemic and following the public health instructions. And I think if we hang on there a little bit more, we'll be able to see each other's smiles, hug our families. So I say listen to the experts. I'm not an expert. I will just listen to the public health experts.
1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation with us. We've got Mary on the line in Braintree. Mary, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I want to say that some people like myself are wearing masks outside now because the allergy pollen is so bad, it helps us breathe mm-hmm. easier if we're masked up.
So thanks for that, Mary. And Joe Battenfeld, I'm going to turn back to you, and I'm going to pair Mary with a cut. And I think I just told the studio I want a Week in Review 3, but I want Week in Review 4. This is some sound last night on MSNBC between Rachel Maddow asking Dr. Rochelle Walensky of the CDC about their certainty, basically.
How sure are you? Because this feels like a really big change.
We're sure. There's an extraordinary amount of evidence now that demonstrates the vaccines are working in the real world, in cohort studies, in care facilities, in across all states, that these vaccines are working the way they worked in the clinical trials.
So, Joe, vaccines are working, which can allow us to take masks off. But as Mary says, the masks are working for some other things, too. But if we're in a moment of public policy decision making, do we take that into consideration, Mary's point, or are we sticking with our view of the pandemic on our mask policy and the rest has to become personal choice?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should stick with the pandemic and what that's showing us and with the CDC guidelines. President Biden, you know, maybe he jumped the gun a little bit by declaring this is a great day for America, but it's a great day for some people in America, but for not for others, like for us in Massachusetts, it's not because we still have the mask mandate. So which public, Marie mentioned we should follow the public health experts, but the health experts seem to disagree on this one. So what do you do in that case? You know, do you, yeah. I think it's important that people know that if you get the vaccine, you can change your life, you can get rid of the mask and go visit your children again, your grandchildren. And it's important that people know that the vaccine worked. If you keep the mask mandate, it's sort of sending a signal to people that the vaccines don't work that well.
Maria, I think you were going to say something there, too.
Yeah, no, I think that I guess the only distinction that I would make, I think even when I listened to the clip that you just played with the doctor, a lot of what she articulated was controlled environments, whether it's in facilities where people have to be vaccinated anyway. So I think outside, I think that's what the president talked about. If you're outside and you've been vaccinated, then not wearing a mask, I think the CDC's instructions are that we should be fine. I do think in an indoor situation where it's not clear that everybody's vaccinated, that if you haven't been vaccinated, I would be circumspect about not wearing a mask. So I actually think the indoor mask situation, particularly for those who are not fully vaccinated, that being more cautious is probably the wisest thing to do. I think there's a difference between the inside and the outside. And I agree with your caller. I use the mask because of the pollen count myself. It's miserable right now.
Yeah, I've been sneezing a lot, I will admit. So listen, listeners, we are about to shift gears and start talking about vaccination of kids ages 12 to 15, which became available in the Commonwealth yesterday. So if you want to call and talk about that subject, the number is 800-423-8255. Joe and Maria, I'll turn to you on that in a second, but I'm going to grab a couple more calls on this subject who will kind of get the last word. We've got Dave on the line from West Roxbury. Dave, go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'm all for what happened, and I think we should follow the science and my mask should come off. But I'm curious about the timing of the release. Earlier in the day, the CDC said they were working on new measures, but it probably wouldn't be until next week. 2:00, take your mask off. 3:30, the president comes out and says, take your mask off indoors and out if you're vaccinated. Up until now, he'd been having a pretty bad week. You know, things were not going well for the Biden administration in many facets of American life. You know, we had a gas shortage. We had inflation rearing its ugly head. The unemployment numbers weren't as good as they were. The stock market dropped 700 points in a day. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, take your mask off.
There we go. All right. Thank you for that, Dave. Thanks for that. And I'll match that kind of up with your statement, Joe Battenfeld, that a 4:00 news conference on a Friday afternoon tends to not bode well either. So interesting bookends there. Let's take Bia on the line from Revere. Bia, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am just concerned about this mask mandate lifting or not, because I'm fully vaccinated, so is the rest of my family, but I have a 6-month-old baby who literally cannot be vaccinated as of now. So I feel like it's sort of a collective action problem at this point, where the people that don't want to wear the masks are also very, very much linked to the people that don't want to get vaccinated. So I just wanted to make a point that put your masks on so that our kids can be safe too. And I'm a middle school teacher. Let's keep our kids safe.
Thanks for that call, Bia. And so that does help us transition into kids. And there has been big news this week on the kids front. Here's Governor Baker earlier this week announcing the availability of the Pfizer vaccine for kids age 12 to 15.
We're also getting ready to begin vaccinating 12 to 15-year-olds. On Monday, the FDA authorized the use of Pfizer vaccine for this age group. People aged 12 to 15 will be able to book appointments or access a walk-up appointment.
But we are, as Bia just sort of embodied in her call, we are cautious with our kids. On Tuesday during Ask the Doctors, we had this call from Jeff in Andover, who has two kids ages 13 and 14.
It seems like a very, very small group of kids were tested with this, and that concerns me as far as the safety issues around getting them vaccinated. My wife and I are all vaccinated, and we're comfortable, and we believe in all of the work that's being done around safety, but as it applies to the kids, is there anything you can say to reassure me about feeling good about doing this for the kids?
Now, of course, the doctor did respond with reassurance, but I want to focus there, Joe Battenfeld. Is there something categorically different when it comes to the question of vaccinating younger and younger people?
Yeah, I mean, it should be safe. Make sure that it's extremely safe for kids. But, I mean, I have a 15-year-old. I'm going to get her vaccinated this weekend. I have no hesitation about doing it. I believe that it's safe. I believe they've done enough studies to indicate that it's safe. So I feel that they have done the proper homework on this one, and that, you know, that it, you know, they delayed this decision for a few months, and now that they have the evidence, at least for Pfizer, Moderna, I understand, is also testing it on kids under 16 too. So hopefully that will come out positive as well.
And Marie, we also notice, you know, Bea said she's a middle school teacher. I've noticed that this week the American Federation of Teachers is now calling for in-person full-time schooling across the board in the fall. That was supported by the Massachusetts chapter of the American Federation of Teachers. How important is this step to solid school year next year?
Yeah, I think for many school districts, it's going to be very important. It's the level of safety for the young people, as well as for the teachers who are going to be asked to be present in the classroom. I also understand the hesitation, right? Because you're 16, you're 15, you're just in the middle of your, you know, your own development. And so we're hoping that this vaccine, I mean, I know for communities of color, we were concerned when we were asking adults to take it. And so I think it's going to, they have to do a little bit more work to explain how they came about and what the research supported for the population at that, for that population. I do believe it's going to be tougher to get parents to have their young teenagers take this vaccine. So they need to do a little bit more. And I don't think they've done that much to reassure families yet.
Let's go back to the phones here. 1-800-423-8255, Louisa in Belmont. Louisa, go ahead.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting, like one of the kids getting vaccinated is actually an important step towards the people feeling comfortable without their masks. I'm a parent of a young child, and when I'm out with my daughter, she still has to wear a mask even though I'm vaccinated. I'm going to keep my mask on. I'm not going to like make her wear hers while I'm sort of like, oh, I'll take mine off. So I think that's another thing. I'm also a teacher. I've talked to a number of parents who feel that way. So I think that's another piece of the removal of masks is the kids getting vaccinated. Thank you.
In solidarity with those kids. That's a good point, Louisa. I want to take one more call here. Nay is on the line in Billerica. Go ahead, Nay.
Yes, I was just wondering if they're sticking to the 12 to 15 group only. So I have an 11-year-old who will be 12 in just a couple of months. And so just wondering how they're handling kids that might be that close to the 12-year-old mark.
Thanks for that question, Nay. Actually, I'll just quickly, that came up in our Ask the Doctors on Tuesday, and the answer was that, of course, the dividing line really was arbitrary in the research with 12-year-olds, mm-hmm. but the authorization for emergency use is for ages 12 to 15. There's anticipation that there will be further research in later stages with younger kids also being authorized. But right now, the cutoff is 12, so it does sound like that's going to be pretty solid. So as we have this conversation, these are looking forward questions that we are now asking Joe Battenfeld. Is this the end or the beginning of the end of this pandemic for us here in the Commonwealth, or is it a false end? What do you think?
I don't think it's the end. It may be the beginning of the end, but as your callers have demonstrated, people have various different viewpoints on this, and a lot of people are confused about this still, about the mask mandate, Rhode Island not only lifted the mask mandate, but they moved up their business reopening to, I think it was May 21st or something, before Memorial Day. So this change, so you can go to Rhode Island and go to a bar or something like that on Memorial Day, and in Massachusetts you can't. So I think, you know, as long as we have this patchwork of systems now that, you know, different states and different cities have different rules, I don't think we're truly at the end yet.
And producer Jamie Bologna is telling me you're right, Joe. May 21st is the date in question. All right, so I want to transition us just a little bit. This is at the intersection of the pandemic and politics. Here's President Joe Biden greeting Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker at a virtual meeting between the White House and six governors about our progress with vaccinations.
You've been doing a hell of a job across the board. You really have. Hope that doesn't ruin your reputation coming from a Democrat, but you're doing a hell of a job.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
So, Marie St. Fleur, I'll just start with, do you agree with President Biden?
You know what? I've done work in other parts of the country. I think that, as I said, I think the governor, at the very beginning, I think that we had some hiccups. But I think that once he caught his stride, that they've done a decent job here in Massachusetts. We lost a lot of people at the very beginning, right? And as you think about, we did not. It was well into March before we really, in my mind, took this pandemic seriously. And so we lost some time there. We had the hiccups with the veterans' homes, and we lost many people. So I think about the people that we've lost through this pandemic. So there have been those hiccups at the beginning. And then, of course, we had the challenges with the websites, right, as things got moving. But there has been a shift. Once they got some control, some direction, they were able to put things in place. And we've been moving through the vaccination phase rather well. You've got 3 million people, over 3 million people that are vaccinated. We're doing right. The numbers are going in the right direction. So, yes. And you know what's refreshing, by the way, is that we can talk to each other as Americans versus this party issue. At the end of the day, the ideology should not keep us from being able to celebrate what's being done right in support of the health and wellness of Americans in this country. So good to him.
So, Marie, I'm going to crack up because, of course, now I want to go into ideology as you just called us to the better angels of our nature. And I'm going to drag us back down into the partisan dirt here a little bit. And listeners, I am. So if you want to join this conversation about where Governor Baker fits in the political landscape as a popular governor in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and unpopular in his party, with a race potentially in his future and positive support from the Democratic president about his handling of the pandemic, that's a lot to talk about. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Joe, you wrote earlier this week about Biden's praise for Charlie Baker. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, the Democratic leadership and Maura Healey had to be listening to Biden and saying, thanks a lot, Joe, you know, really, giving this huge endorsement to this Republican governor that Joe Biden did makes it very difficult for Maura Healey and others who want to displace Baker. Now, we still don't know whether Baker is going to run for a third term or not, but certainly if he does, that would fit on a bumper sticker. You're doing a hell of a job. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you can't buy that good publicity if you're a candidate and the Democratic president of the United States is praising you as a great governor. That's got to be very awkward for Democrats to hear.
So, Marie, yeah. I have to admit that when I heard him say that, it made me think of the opposite. It made me think of, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. From George W. Bush to the head of FEMA in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. So what an interesting mm-hmm. difference the presidential praise this time means versus last time.
Mm-hmm. But the thing that really gets me around this is we were so far of losing who we are as a democracy over the past 4 years. We've got to get back to balance. And so I'm going to go back to that again. I think that in this democracy, it's a competitive democracy. So the fact is, if you did something fine, that's great. Somebody acknowledges it. But at the end of the day, there's a playing field. Everyone, whether it's Maura Healey or whoever else is going to come, Downing or whoever's going to come for that seat, they're going to have to be able to distinguish themselves. And I don't believe that, yes, you can put it on a bumper sticker, but at the end of the day, you're going to still have to defend the rest of your record. And I say that the fact that we have a functioning democracy, that you have the fact that the governors, thank God, across this country did their job in order to make certain that the public health was a priority through this pandemic, I think it shows how the places where our government is working. That's how I see it. And I encourage people to just grab onto more of that, because it gets too divisive when we can't even honor each other's strengths, but just simply bang at each other's weaknesses. Then I don't think it's too dark for us. And it's hard for our democracy to thrive if we continue in that vein.
So, Marie, that feels like a cold drink of water in an overwhelming desert, given how rancorous our partisanship is. You know, we have the situation this week with more than 100 Republicans signing onto a letter threatening to leave the party, given the battle inside the GOP for traditional Republican values versus this strain of supporting President Trump and his continued lies and claims about an election that he lost and said he didn't. And I want to play a little sound. On Wednesday, the governor was asked about that letter and about his party and the results of the 2020 election.
I've had my differences, as everybody knows, with plenty of folks in the party over the course of the time that I've been in public life. But I'm a big believer in what the party fundamentally stands for, based on what I believe it stands for. I made very clear that I felt the election process that took place back in November was fair and that President Joe Biden won the election.
So based on what I believe it stands for, Joe Battenfeld, it is a stake in the ground for a party that... when it existed, was more in line with the type of we can work together that Marie St. Fleur is talking about. Do you think the party as he believes it stands for exists?
Not much. I'm telling you, it's really become difficult to find Republicans who think the way Charlie Baker does. And the fact is that Trump still holds a huge sway over the Republican Party. He is gone, but he's still trying to get involved in elections and even minor elections across the country. And he's going to be a factor. And, you know, Charlie Baker can say that this is, you know, all he wants, that, you know, what his vision of the Republican Party is, but that's not reality. So it's a little awkward for Baker when these questions are raised. He handles them pretty well, but it's still an uncomfortable moment. And you know, the fact is, you know, you mentioned all the people signing that letter, I think 100 or so, 200 Republicans signing on to saying they may break away from the party if Trump is still in a leadership position in the party. Well, you know, who is on that? Bill Weld was one of the signers. He hasn't been a Republican for years. The guy was a libertarian, and I don't even know what he is now. But so there's really very few Republicans who think the way Charlie Baker does.
I want to come back to you, Marie.
Mm-hmm. No, I guess my feeling is this. We've been through this historically, right? It's not the first time that this party has split, right? Whether it was Taft or Roosevelt. I mean, it's not the first time that that we've seen this this tussle, and so they're going to be, and they'll figure out a way. We need more than one party, right? And by the way, you know, I think there's more going on here, and that's been going on, and it's because we haven't been vigilant about how we honor and protect this democracy. That in terms of the Republican Party. The conspiracy theories have taken over all of the apparatus of their governance of their party. I mean, but that has happened over a period of time. But they're really good people who still believe. I mean, some of the things that Republicans believe in, people talk about, it's not exclusive to Republicans. Constitutional order, we believe in constitutional order. The rule of law, we believe in the rule of law. Ethical government, I believe in ethical government. It's how we execute it and how we implement it. That's where the shift happens. But what's happening in the party right now is essentially what happened after, you know, in many ways, I think of it as after Reconstruction. This has been being put in place for many years as the country has shifted in complexion. And so now the fight is now open. It's an open fight, and people weren't paying attention. And this is where we find ourselves. So they have to work it out, and maybe they will be. Those 150, 200, or 300 will create something that's more akin to where they see themselves as more progressive versus this wing of the party that doesn't want to move forward into the 21st century. They're stuck back in the 1800s, which is where they'd like to be, and they'd like to take me back there with them.
To your point, Marie, Lynn Cheney said this week that Trump is willing, quote, to unravel the democracy to come back into power, end quote. We're about to wrap. I do want to give a couple callers a chance to get last word. Jeff's on the line in Milton. Jeff, briefly, go ahead.
So if Lynn Cheney, my speaking against Trump, is a, let's call her a radical Republican, I find myself thinking, what's a moderate Republican? And Charlie Baker doesn't fit that definition. He fits the definition of a moderate Republican maybe 40 years ago, but I don't think there's a place for him in today's Republican Party.
Thanks for that call, Jeff. Let's take Megan in Watertown as well. Go ahead, Megan.
Hi. I don't really think there's a point of talking about the Republican Party and what they would or wouldn't do until they know. Otherwise, it's just all theoretical.
Thanks for that call, too, Megan. So I think we're going to wrap it there. Joe Battenfeld, Marie St. Fleur, fascinating conversation. And I appreciate the vision about what the dangers are and what's possible as well. Marie St. Fleur is a former Massachusetts state representative and now a principal at St. Fleur Communications. Joe Battenfeld is the Boston Herald political columnist. Thanks, both of you, for doing Week in Review with us.
Thanks so much, Luciana.